as we ring in a new year at WWGH 107.1 FM and WWGH1071.com, we'd like to take a special look back at some of the most memorable moments from Now with Scott Spears. Scott is on every Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday between about 12:10 p.m. and 2 p.m. He often has celebrity guests, celebrities known throughout the world for their humor, their insight, their special talents, and here at WWGH for the time they spent at our microphones. Legendary actress, voice of Ursula from The Little Mermaid, a frequent guest on Scott's show. Pat Carroll.
A lot of actresses in your business have either fibbed a little bit on their age or certainly do not like to mention their age after a certain age. Was that ever the case with you?
Never. I am always proud to be the age I am, thrilled to death to have lived so long. And I find age is really just a quality of mind. What are people so afraid of about the years they've lived on Earth? They should be celebrating. How extraordinary to have any time on this planet Earth at all, to experience everything there is to experience, to still be curious about things. It's exciting, Scott. Come on, it's wonderful.
You know, Pat, a lot of people in the entertainment industry, maybe it's not that they don't want to share their age, but a lot of people have said after a certain age, the work kind of dries up and they still want to work. Did you ever find that?
I have never considered it because I always thought, well, if you want to work, make yourself available. Let people know you want to work. You know, a lot of people think I'm retired. I'm not retired at all. I'm just waiting for someone to ask me to dance. Oh, no, life is too much fun.
Would you like a role to come? What type of thing would you like to do at this age? Would you like to do stage work? Would you like to do a movie? More voiceover work?
It doesn't make much difference. I just enjoy my work, which I have done for how many years now? Thank you, Lord. I have loved what I do since I was 13, and I've never fallen out of love with it. It's a pleasure and a joy always to do any work theatrical. It's just very exciting, very demanding, and it asks the best that you have to give. How many professions do that?
You're exactly right. You know, Pat, actors and actresses always kind of interest me. What is it about becoming somebody else that is intriguing to you?
I think for myself, I can only answer for me. It's the joy of trying on new characters, to try to be somebody different than you are. It's fascinating. I've always found it to be so.
Former Secretary of State, Madeleine Albright.
Secretary Albright, I just have to ask a quick question about your career. When you were Secretary of State, what was your greatest memory?
Well, my greatest memory actually was going to Pristina in Kosovo after we had stopped the genocidal ethnic cleansing there. And I was standing in the square there, and there were signs all over saying, thank you, USA, thank you, USA, and people cheering. And I thought, that we had done the right thing and that we had really helped people to be saved from just killing because of who they were, not anything that they had done.
You know, Secretary Albright, getting to this election, because we're on limited time, everybody says it's a different election. When you look at what this election has been, what are your thoughts on the whole thing?
It is a different election because I have been involved in many campaigns since 1972, and I have never seen anything like this where there is an attempt not only to have different views, but to divide us and to have us dislike each other and disrespect each other really undermine the democratic system by Donald Trump. And that really troubles me because I am a naturalized American, very proud to have become an American, and I am very sad to see the kinds of discussion that is going on and the lack of civility, and it's disgusting, if I could put it that way.
The Reverend Jesse Jackson.
Cubs or Indians tonight?
Cubs.
I had no doubt that was coming, and I'm with you on that one.
I didn't hear about that. Wait a minute, y'all won the fast fucking down LeBron. What else do y'all want? Y'all getting greedy?
You got it, Reverend Jackson.
But you know, the good news is all these young men are doing, they have the freedom to compete, to participate, and when the game's over, they're going to embrace and look at next season. And that's what makes America great. I wish that politicians would make the same decision. Let the winner win, let the loser lose. When it's all over, shake hands and reheal the nation.
A great way to put it. Reverend Jackson, you are supporting Hillary Clinton in the Buckeye State today. Why did you choose to support Secretary Clinton?
Well, I support her because of the side of history she's on. First of all, she supports the protected right to vote. Trump calls voter suppression fraud. And states, for example, like Michigan, you can only vote one day on Tuesday. You can't vote on Sunday. You can't do pre-voting. That is designed to suppress the vote. Many college campuses, they would not let a precinct on the campus. Voter suppression. And so we marched too long and died too much for the right to vote. Go down the way of calling it fraud when the courts call it signs of rejection. Secondly, she supports workers' rights to livable wage. Workers, there's more money than money, making $8-$9 an hour. Those who have hamburgers and the like, they service, they should get paid for work. Thirdly, she supports gender equality. Women cannot buy bread or milk cheaper, or get tuition cheaper. She supports student loan debt reduction. She supports the Supreme Court that has a broad view of the American public. He says he wants more support like Scalia and Clarence Thomas. We want more like Thurgood Marshall. And so we just have two sides of history, and I support Hillary's side of history.
Reverend Jackson, we're 5 days away. What would you see a Donald Trump presidency like? What would be the problems with that in your mind?
Well, one of the first problems with a Trump presidency is he wants to deport 15 million people. Imagine 15 million people living in fear of deportation, taking children out of school and people off from work. Well, he wouldn't offend Mexico, our next-door neighbor with whom we share 2,000 miles of border. Why offend your next-door neighbor? We brag about Reagan taking the Berlin Wall down, and we're going to build a wall between us and Mexico. That is irrational. He wants to offend Muslims, our neighbors, our trading partners, our friends.
Longtime newscaster, former host of 2020, and Ohio native, Hugh Downs.
Going back to Truman, would you compare him to any president you've known?
No, there again, you know, talk about surprises. Truman was a haberdasher for Independence, Missouri, and a vice president, and so they wanted to make sure he wasn't trying to run for president or anything undue. So they made him, you know, he became the vice president, and then his boss got assassinated, and he suddenly was president. Well, he was a good president, I think, and he showed it when who was the general that thought they could chomp on him? And Truman just said to him, "You're fired." What was that general?
Was it MacArthur?
What's that?
Was it MacArthur, General MacArthur?
I think so. And he just immediately showed his power as a president, and he was a very good president. You know, he faced an awful lot of stuff. I had to examine this myself because he okayed the Hiroshima and what was the other thing? The two things that we put an atomic bomb on.
Nagasaki.
And in doing that, he probably saved an awful lot of lives, American lives and Japanese lives, because there would have been a long ending thing that would have made the beaches in the other side of the world where was it? There were so many troops that went, 100,000 troops that went ashore and got killed because and that's what would happen if he hadn't scared the Japanese off with two atomic bombs. And I thought he behaved as a president. So that kind of surprise can often come up. And I just don't think that Trump could possibly be as bad as Andrew Jackson, for example.
It's interesting. When Truman took office, people thought he didn't know anything. Most people didn't even know who he was. Reagan, people were a little hesitant. They were scared of him. Is it possible that Donald Trump could end up being a great president?
It's possible. It really is possible. Part of it, he's just always been very outspoken, and that type of thing will be stuck to him forever because it's all recorded and it's all Twitter and everything has got it. It's choking the stratosphere practically with its approach that Trump has. And that will dog him, but I don't think that will make him a bad president necessarily. And the thing is now that we've got to give him a chance to see if he can do it.
Actress and singer from the Jeffersons and 227, Marla Gibbs.
Marla, do you still have to go out on auditions or do the scripts come to you?
No, I must go out and win them, honey.
When Marla Gibbs shows up at an audition, because most people have to know who you are, do they have a preconceived notion or do you have to show them you can do something else?
I have to show them I can do what it is that I'm auditioning for, and I don't always get it, so.
What kind of parts do you like to audition for?
Well, it's never what I like to audition for, it's what's there. If there's something that I don't like, I have to say I'm not going out for it.
What type of things will you not do?
Things that are raunchy for no reason.
The series 227 was such a great series. Unfortunately, most of the members of the Jeffersons have passed away. Has there ever been talk of doing a 227 reunion?
No, except from the fans, the people on the street, they keep asking.
Where would Mary...
There's never been as far as the producers are concerned that I've heard of.
Where would Mary and Lester Jenkins be today?
Mary would be in Englewood, where she is. Lester would be in Palm Desert, where he is.
You know, that show worked so well. What do you think it was about 227 that made it... It was an instant success.
Well, we were a family show, and they're mostly, in this country, there's mostly family, so people could relate. Husband and wives could relate. When Lester would do something, the men would cheer. And when Mary would win, the women would cheer. And they'd probably say to their husbands, see what she said? That was right. And the husband would say, did you hear what he said? That's what I'm talking about. So there was a couple that came up to us, a Caucasian couple, when we were doing something for the network, that ran up to us at the airport and they said, you're doing us, you're doing us. And I was very happy because that's what we were trying to do.
You know, it's very interesting.
Relate to most of the people in the country.
It's very interesting, Marla, because I still watch repeats of The Jeffersons and 227, and The Jeffersons is a great show. But there are some things in The Jeffersons that are of its time. 227 could be happening today.
Right.
From Soap and Benson, Robert Guillaume.
when you're given a character like Benson on the page, and of course this is radio, people couldn't see the facial expressions, but they're brilliant. How much does the actor put into that? How much of Benson was on the page, and how much did Robert Guillaume create?
Well, I can't honestly say how much was where, but I do know that the writer of Soap, whose name for the moment escapes me, Susan Harris, yes, she had written a wonderful setup for Benson. It was all laid out there on the paper, and I simply had to put my own idea of what he was saying and how and why he was saying it.
When you first got that pilot script and you looked at Benson, now he was a housekeeper, but mm-hmm. who was he to you?
Well, he was my grandmother, for one thing. My grandmother had worked in the white people's houses, and she had always seemed disrespectful. She would come in and she would do the laundry. And after she had put the laundry and arranged it the way she wanted, the woman who owned the house and for whom she worked would come along and rearrange things. And my grandmother would stand to the side while she, with a drink in her hand, did as much as she could to undo what my grandmother did. My grandmother didn't get angry at her. She just abided her. And just we would stand there and watch the woman do what she wanted to with the laundry. And when she finished, my grandmother would say, "Are you through now?" And the woman would say, "Well, of course." And but my grandmother never got flustered about anything. She was a wonderful, wonderful woman and a great teacher to me. Because at that time I was having trouble with my temper and everything, and people all over the city of St. Louis that I encountered would be saying to me, "You better change your attitude because you're going to get killed."
Sports writer, sports commentator, Larry Merchant.
Larry, what was it about Joe Garagiola that made him transition so easily onto a program like the Today Show, which then was strictly news?
Well, he was one of those people gifted with the philosophy that the life is too serious to take seriously. And being a ball player, he saw the unserious side of life around him and laughed with it and about it. And of course, his having grown up on the same street in St. Louis with Yogi Berra, he became his sort of biographer and telling stories about him, and was a broadcaster, and then became went on the Today Show. I worked with him on a prize fight or two back in the day when we were at NBC. And he was just a guy who always had a smile on his face. And later in his career, he devoted a lot of time to trying to get ball players to give up smokeless tobacco because of its cancer, its connection to cancer.
He was really in a very unique league all of his own. He really had a genuine presence on the television screen that a lot of former ball players who become broadcasters don't necessarily have. Joe Garagiola, I always felt, was different.
You know, Scott, my experience working in television primarily over the last 40 years, is that guys like Garagiola are always on, and then they go on a set, and there's a camera that catches them when they're on. That's just who they are. Make a production out of reading a menu when you go out to dinner with them. And Joe is just one of those gregarious characters, and somebody recognized it, and he became a baseball color man and inside man, and people recognized he had more to say about life than just balls and strikes, and he became the host of the Today Show and a guy who was a star.
Legendary talk show host Dick Cavett.
I had never seen Bob Hope get angry, and I'm not saying he was angry, but when you asked him about his money, his net worth, I thought he got a little perturbed.
Yeah, I think so too. By the way, did you say Pat Carroll all along?
Yes, I did.
I undoubtedly had Pat Carroll.
You've had two of them. You've had two.
On my faulty phone, it sounded like Pat Kerman or something. Anyway, yes, Pat Carroll.
And we'll get back to that in a second. But Bob Hope, I got a little angry about the money.
Well, he got furious about the money when it happened. And by it, I mean, I was a writer on The Tonight Show, picked up the paper. Hope livid about money matters. It may have been Life magazine, check me on that, brought out a story that Bob Hope, at a time when people were not making all the money they might have liked to have made, and Bob Hope is worth $400 million. Now, can you know how much that was in the 60s?
Billions.
70s. It came out in May. He denied it. And Mort Lockman, his head writer then, told me later, Bob almost died. He said, he woke me up, he said, at 3 in the morning and said, have you seen this article about my... Oh, Jesus. You just heard sound effect of a chair sliding into the wall, carrying me with it.
Oh, no, I wondered what...
Are you still there?
Yeah, I thought we were going to have to call the emergency squad. Are we okay, Dick?
Hello?
Oh, yeah, Earth to Dick Cavett. Are you there? The ghost of Bob Hope just swept your chair out.
Bob Hope just struck me over on the side of the head, and my chair slid backwards, and I did a wonderful Buster Keaton save of putting my arm down to break the fall.
He said, stop talking about my money. I told you that 30 years ago.
You know, I'm beginning to believe you. I think I hear thanks or no thanks for the memory being played. Anyway, to get back to that story, and that's a unique moment on your show, I'll bet.
That is. That's a classic.
But you haven't had a guy die yet, so you're not even close. He was afraid they wouldn't laugh at him anymore.
Well,
he said, they know that I'm this rich. My God. Well, Lockman did the right thing. He managed to let Bob get back to sleep somehow. And then told him to joke about it. Hope refused. Then he was convinced. And so the next monologue, he referred to the money. The audience clapped, so they knew what he was talking about. And he said, it's really bad now. Relatives come over and cut open my mattresses and convinced they could find his wealth.
Mm.
He did get over it, but it really shook him. And he said, it isn't $400 million anyway. It's more like $300 million.
Actor, comedian, former Senator Al Franken.
Senator Franken, aside from campaigning for people and doing some political radio, you came right from show business to public office, a high public office, Senator. Donald Trump, a higher public office, coming directly from show business, I guess, as it were. When you walk in and you've never been in politics to that degree, what is the most shocking thing? Was it difficult for you?
Well, I took a slightly different path. I mean, I did do Saturday Night Live for 15 seasons, but then after that, I did a transition, and I wrote books about politics. They're satirical in large part, but also serious. And so I've always been someone who has been very interested in public policy, and started that as a kid during the Civil Rights Movement. And during Saturday Night Live, I wrote a lot of the political satire that was on the show. And my transition was I wrote a number of books, and then I did a daily three-hour radio show. Now, that's not the same as being a public servant, as being a city councilman or a mayor, or, you know, any other of these public service offices that give you that kind of experience. What I found out in the Senate, I was a little shocked at how little debate, actual debate, there was. Most times that senator speaks on the floor, he or she is the only person there. There's no colleagues on the floor, because they're all doing their work, and the work is hearings, it's meeting with constituents, it's meeting with other groups, it's all kinds of things. So there's less debate than I would have hoped. Also, when I got there, which was 2009, it seemed like there was a conscious effort by Mitch McConnell and the Republicans not to cooperate at all with President Obama. And I asked a few of my colleagues who'd been in the Senate for a long time, is this the worst that it's been in terms of that? And many of them said, well, remember when that guy got caned? And I go, you mean right before the Civil War? Yeah, I think that was worse. And I went, well, boy. And if anything, it's gotten even worse since then. And I think it's been this intransigence, and I think people want us to work with each other and cooperate, get things done, and it's been hard to do that. And I think that Trump is sort of a natural extension of that, which has been going on for a long time, which is demonizing your opponents, like Gingrich did. This is in a book I wrote called Rush Limbaugh is a Big Fat Idiot and Other Observations, which was really about the loss of civility and about right-wing talk radio. And then I wrote a book called Lies and Lying Liars, Who Tell Them a Fair and Balanced Look at the Right, which was about right-wing media, other right-wing media like Fox. And this sort of coarsening of our dialogue and our politics. And I think we've gotten to the worst extension of that in this presidential race, and hopefully it will improve afterwards.
Always a great guest, legendary wrestler, Big Bully Busick.
You said when you got to Marion, you were going to slap the taste out of my mouth. You accused Bobo Brazil Jr. of things. Then the second time we talked, you got a little bit of the coward in you, and you had your lawyer call in, and he threatened us with lawsuits and hold titanium plates, and now you've rigged the contract, which we'll get into in just a moment for Saturday night. So by the third time we talk, why would I have anything nice to say about you?
I rigged the contract? I rigged the contract?
Yes.
Are you crazy? Have you lost your mind? You got a guy running around with the heavyweight championship of the world around his waist, carrying that belt, and fans cheering for him, but I'm going to expose him for that titanium surgically implanted, I might add. You probably paid for it, to put in his head, so when he does that cocoa butt, he just knocks people out. Well, who wouldn't get knocked out when you got a titanium implant surgically implanted in your head?
No. Here's how you've rigged the contract for Saturday night. We have a whole lot of developments to talk about, and this is just the first one. Last time, folks, we talked about this, and I said, I don't think Bully is too bright, because he's managing the Butcher Beast that night, and he wants a stipulation put in the contract to where if Bobo Brazil Jr. uses the headbutt that night, that he's immediately disqualified. Now, I didn't understand this, because this is a heavyweight title match, and if Bobo was disqualified, yes, he would lose the purse money that night, and he would have a loss in the record books, but it would be by disqualification. And as all you wrestling fans know, a heavyweight title can only change on pinfall or submission. But we looked at that contract, and Big Bully Busick signed on behalf of the Butcher Beast. Now, the contract was drawn up by this shyster lawyer that Busick has, and when we finally pulled it out and looked at it, and we have a member of the executive committee here today who we're going to bring out here momentarily, but the contract does read that if Bobo loses that match in any way, pinfall, submission, disqualification, countout, that the title changes hands. So So what kind of cowardly move was that?
Hold the phones, Furry Brown. What you see is what you get. What's happening here is what you try to do, as you always do. You manipulate things behind the scenes. You're a lot like that guy that started the fights at the Trump rallies and said, "Oh no, we didn't do it." See, that's the way you operate, Scott Spears. I got a hidden video on you being a proponent of Bobo Brazil Jr., and what I did was, you painted yourself in a corner.
An outstanding impersonation of Mr. Donald Trump.
And you've got, I just learned this morning, you've got Chachi, you've got Scott Baio.
I've got Scott Baio, and I think we all know how big of a star he is. He's a huge, huge star. People listen to him, they see his movies, they watch his TV shows, they read his books. I mean, this guy's really big. We're so lucky to have Chachi, Scott Baio.
Oh my goodness, it's really record-breaking. And did I hear there's a possibility Don King and Bobby Knight could be their sports contingent?
Absolutely. You know, I love sports. I'm big on sports. I think sports are fantastic. I hope Bobby comes because he loves to throw chairs, and I'd love him to throw some chairs. I think that would be fantastic. Really a lot of fun. Yeah, I don't want him to hit anybody because, you know, but I think it'll be great. Don King's always been a fantastic guy, and I love boxing. I did a lot of boxing in Atlantic City. So
you know,
very exciting to have these people.
Donald, I did a little investigating work, and I heard that you and Don King go to the same hairdresser.
That's not true. That's a horrible, horrible rumor started by Hillary Clinton people. I should say crooked Hillary Clinton. Listen, Scott, I want to tell you something. I have been saying crooked Hillary Clinton so much recently that the words are now interchangeable. Did you know this?
I didn't know that.
People are now saying, hey, your tie is Hillary, or that painting on the wall is Hillary. That's how powerful I am. I'm able to make the meanings of words change.
You are a powerful man, Donald. Mm. Now what do we have in store for your big acceptance speech Thursday night?
Well, before I get to that, I have to talk about your terrible, terrible, terrible governor, John Kasich.
Oh, no.
I think what he's doing is terrible. Did I mention it's terrible? Because I think it's terrible. He's not endorsing me, which I think is crazy. He's really not helping at all. He's not showing up. I don't know what this guy's problem is. You know what I'm saying? I mean, he's got a supercut haircut. He has a terrible suit on. I could really, really help this guy out, but I have to tell you something. I am not going to help him because he's not helping me. And I'm a very nice guy, but he is not being nice to me.
Well, Donald, that was on my list of things to ask you about because
I had to get right to it because I just cannot get over that he's doing this. It makes no sense.
Wonderful actress from Different Strokes and The Facts of Life, Charlotte Ray.
We had you on the program here, I think it was back in October of 2014, and there had been a leak or a story, this is before the book's published, about your husband being bisexual, and I had brought that up, and at that time you didn't want to talk about it, so I found it very interesting that you wrote about it.
Yes, well, Larry and I were able to write about it in an honest way, and I'm sure a lot of women identify with what I went through, and it's part of life, and that's the way it is. But the love continues. You know, we all loved each other. Yeah.
Your son Andy is a big part of the book. The son you mentioned, who was mentally challenged. What is that like to have a child who is in institutions throughout their life?
Well, read the book. I can't tell
you. You're right. It's in the book. It's in the book, right. But and there are some. Is there anything in the book you regret putting in?
No. No, I think it's very, very good to be very open and very honest.
Absolutely.
I am who I am, and this is who I am. You know?
Absolutely. Is there?
And it gives other people courage to know that I have survived many illnesses and many challenges, and I'm, by the grace of God, one day at a time, I'm still here enjoying my life.
And you recently had a birthday on April 22nd, a milestone birthday. Was that a fun time for you?
Wow. I was busy rehearsing for the play, but I received a million balloons and flowers from everywhere, everywhere. All my theater friends, my television friends, my cousins, my children, my Lord, my house was a festival of flowers and balloons. And we celebrated, a couple of my friends set up the table, and my kids brought in, my son and my daughter-in-law and my grandkids brought in food, and we had a grand celebration. It was beautiful. Couldn't have been better. Couldn't have. No.
What is it like to be grandma at this time in your life? Is that a fun job?
Yes, yes. Oh, yeah. they're wonderful kids, and we get on fine, and they're proud of me, and I'm proud of them, and it's wonderful. But I have a lot of people that are very close to me. I have good friends, and we're very supportive of each other, and you know, life is good. Life is beautiful. Each day is a birthday. Everybody should live in the now. Every day is a birthday. Because you never know when you're going to be hit by a bus or something. So enjoy the day.
Absolutely. When you look back at your life over these 90 years, what would you consider to be the best time?
Today.
That's a wonderful outlook. Was there a time when life was sincerely difficult where you ever thought, boy, this is just not great?
Yeah, when I first found out about Andy's condition, because in the beginning he was just a normal looking little baby, and then when I found out, you know, when I found out, it's in the book where I finally went to a doctor who analyzed him at a child development center, and he said to me, he's autistic, and I thought he said artistic. So I almost sank to my knees to thank God that he was okay. He was just a little offbeat because he was artistic. I had never heard the word autistic at that time. Autism was not known very well at that time. Little did I know that it was going to change my life. I thought I would never work again because I needed to be there to see what we can do with my son. Well, read the book. You'll find out all about it.
Attorney F. Lee Bailey.
When you were on television, and arguably what was the most famous case of all time, certainly the first big publicized television trial, O.J. Simpson, if I go to YouTube today, there is the full 9-hour cross-examination of you cross-examining Mark Furman. Now, I understand it's hard to step outside yourself, but what made you so good?
Well, I looked for the jugular vein. I mean, first, it was known before we began, and that it's not 9 hours, it's more like 3, because the judge actually cut me off, and he said, until you bring in your witnesses to impeach Detective Furman, I'm going to suspend your cross-examination. But I knew right away that the man was a racist because he filed a lawsuit saying he was a racist.
trying to get early retirement, we had a bucket full of very credible witnesses, including a judge, who heard him use racial epithets and speak in a way that totally denigrated not only African-American citizens, but Jews. He absolutely hated the Jews. So I knew I had a time bomb, and I just had to find the right button to push, and the button was to make him admit his use of despicable language in dealing with black people, the N-word, so to speak. And they tried to train him to say yes, because they knew I would ask him the question. And I could tell from his eyes he wasn't going to be able to do it. So when I hit him with that question, he froze up. He said, no, I've never used that. Well, we had what we wanted. There's a saying in law, and I'm sure it laps over to other phases of life, falsus in unum, falsus in omnibus. And that means if you tell a lie about one thing, you may well be lying about everything. And it's what we wanted to get on Furman. There was more that could have been explored, but that was the key thing, because Furman himself summed up the prosecution's case. He said, this is a case about a glove. And of course, he was referring to the one he claimed to have found at O.J.'s residence just outside the building. Without me, the glove does not get in evidence. Therefore, without me, the case goes bye-bye. Well, how he knew that it was a case about a glove is a very good question in and of itself. Now, I hasten to point out the public got to hear all of this. The jury got to hear only two rather mild little snippets. Judge Ito bent way over, contradicting his own appellate court and the Supreme Court of the United States in excluding evidence of Furman's racial bias. Racial bias is always admissible for impeachment in the courts of the United States, and after recognizing that, when the prosecution objected to the use of the so-called N-word, he recognized the Supreme Court case and his own appellate division case, but he turned around and essentially, in my view, simply ignored them or defied them. I do know that Johnny Cochran gave him a lashing on television, night of his ruling, that I thought would have Johnny in one of the jails where Furman said they'd like to kill black people.
Actor and talk show host, Mr. Charles Grodin.
So at this point, you I don't want to put words in your mouth, but it seems like you might favor Hillary Clinton.
Yeah, I probably do. I do.
Yeah. Now, Charles, one thing I want to get into here. Oh, by the way, the crack team here, the crack staff has just worked this up. Five commentaries for 15 years, 3,900 commentaries.
Wow.
Oh,
well,
man.
It keeps you busy.
Well, that does keep you busy. 3,900. What do you do with them when you're done with them, Charles?
I broadcast them. They go on CBS Network Radio.
And then they send them over to
They send them over to, I think, about 30 to 40 million people a year. They're 30 to 40 million people a day.
And then they send them right over to the Museum
on the network,
of...
at the network, which is in downtown, in 57th Street in Manhattan.
And then they send them over to the Museum of Television
where,
and Radio.
Well, I don't know where they send them, but they're out on the air all over the country, so it's very flattering.
I bet they're encapsulized somewhere.
Well, I don't know. I know that one time I used my the fact that I'm on the air every day to get a woman out of prison. She had been in America we have the felony murder rule. Every country in the world has gotten rid of the felony murder rule except America, and Kentucky, Hawaii, and Michigan have gotten rid of it in America. What it says is if you have anything to do with a murder, you're as guilty as the person who committed the murder. Well, the most egregious example of this is a boy in Florida, Ryan Hawley, who lent his car to his roommate and went to sleep. He had done this many times before. Nothing negative ever happened. This time, the roommate went out with others and committed a robbery and a murder. They all received appropriate harsh sentences, but Ryan Hawley was sentenced to life in prison. Now, recently, because I stay in touch with his family, it's been reduced, but he's still in prison. He may be getting out when he's 50 years old. He spent most of his life in prison because he lent his car to his roommate and went to sleep, period. Now, we're getting rid of the felony murder rule, as I said, in Kentucky, Michigan, Hawaii, and the president, as you know, is from Hawaii, so I'm now trying to get word to him that they might want to get rid of the felony murder rule. If someone commits a murder, I understand the need for harsh punishment, but for somebody who lends their car and goes to sleep, it doesn't seem appropriate for America.
Well, in this case of Ryan Holly, in a specific case like that, isn't there a governor in that state who could do a pardon?
The governor in that state was Rick Scott in Florida, and he was up on many charges himself. Now, Ryan Holly's sentence has been reduced. As I said, he'll get out when he's 50 years old. Yeah, they could do more. They could do more, and hopefully they will if I can get word to... the president's gotten involved with commuting certain sentences of nonviolent. Well, this kid was home asleep in bed. Talk about nonviolent.
A frequent guest on our station, the one and only comedian and author, Mr. Dick Gregory.
This was an observation, and I wanted to bring this up to you at the time it was going on, and you brought it up earlier. The World Series between the Cubs and the Indians, two teams that had not been there in a long time. Now, we have an election going on up until that point that dominated every newspaper, every internet, the news media in general. Now, here's what baffled me. This World Series happens. Two teams haven't been there in years. All of a sudden, World Series goes to 7 games, which pushes it out to 6 days before the election.
Yes.
Which is odd because it pushed the election off the front page of the papers.
That's right.
Now, the Cubs win this thing for the first time in 109 years.
Yes.
And Hillary Clinton is from Illinois. Now, if you're trying to win this election and the team, your home team, just won the election 6 days ago, wouldn't you put a Cubs cap on somewhere? The country's in love with them.
Yeah, but wait, before you say that, wouldn't you go to one of the games?
You got it. You got it.
You can go on to Gooseneck, Tennessee. Yeah, and so, but that's how much control they have. They'll have. One day, when you have some time, punch up. There's a doctor in Italy can cure any form of cancer you got with baking soda, huh? They got a 6-year waiting list. People call me all the time. Do you know, well, I know about him, and I talk to his office. Can you get so-and-so in? Huh? Collard greens, anything you have, collard greens can cure it. Black folks, that's all we eat is collard greens, but somebody didn't tell us you ain't supposed to cook it. If you listen to me now, put your right hand in boiling hot water and your left hand in a deep freeze, ain't neither one of them no good. And when you eat cooked food or frozen food, you ain't getting no nutrition. I mean, look, like when they say eternal life, that ain't the church, that's the universe. Eternal life means eternal life. It don't mean dying at 32 or 22 or none of that. Eternal life. A gorilla, huh? Gorilla don't eat cooked food. Chimps and stuff, only animals, them dogs you got in your house. Them dogs you got in your house. Them cats you got in your house, huh? And I was telling somebody the other day, if a cat walked down the street and see a dog, it know it's a dog. You looked at this election and didn't know these are dogs? Now, I'm not talking about animal dogs, okay? You didn't know that, but you hit it, brother, dead on the head. That's why the people that listen to you, it's a privilege to hear.
Scott, Sean, Terry, and Adam, along with our entire staff, would like to thank you for listening to WWGH. And stay tuned for more great guests, like the ones you just heard, on Now with Scott Spears, Monday through Thursday, 12:10 p.m. until 2 p.m. We are the talking place. WWGH 107.1 FM. Be sure to visit our website. We update it every day. WWGH1071.com. You can listen to and download archives of shows from the past year. From Scott, Charlie, Adam, Marge, Ed, much more. Happy New Year from The Talking Place, WWGH.